Thank you for checking out Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. It really means a lot to me that you're listening to this podcast. If you listen and you like the content, then make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave a review. Please do that. And also go check me out on some of my other platforms. I have a long-running YouTube channel. I've got a blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com. If you're interested in becoming a CRA or you're interested in getting a career in this industry, go to thecraacademy.com. If you're a research site owner interested in getting more studies for your site or negotiating better contracts for your site, go to my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, and check it out. I offer consulting services. If you're a pharma, biotech, life sciences company, a CRO, I own a startup CRO, and we're here to help you, whatever it is you want. If you're a CRO, we can white label a lot of services for you. We have CRA coverage across the country at cost. We can do this at scale. If you're a pharma company, we are a full service CRO, and we're very confident in our pricing, and we are extremely competitive at bidding. And if you're also interested in your own digital marketing and leveraging a podcast maybe for yourself, reach out to me, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Again, thank you very much and enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome everyone to the first webinar of 2018. Thank you to everyone watching on Instagram also and listening on the podcast. We did episode yesterday, Chris. We did episode 110, and this will be episode 111 because these are good pieces of content that even though we're going to be sharing slides, which I'm going to upload now, but there's a lot of people that just listen podcast. So this is a busy year, right?
Absolutely.
How busy has it been? Like, well, as far as studies and all that kind of stuff.
Well, for us, it's been very busy for the start of the year, which is nice, always nice. Mm-hmm. And for sites specifically, lots of site selection visits.
Yeah. Anyone that called in, there are slides that we're presenting. You will get the replay emailed to you. Anyone who registered for this webinar will get the replay sent to them. Anyone on Instagram or the podcast, this will be on YouTube. So it's the importance of quality assurance. Amy made these slides. But it's really, I call it how to not lose a study, right? Because that's practically what's important. Everyone talks about quality assurance, and that's great from like a philosophical perspective. But what's the practical implications of QA if you're a site?
Well, if the quality is good, you're not going to lose the trial.
And you're going to get future business too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So that's really what this webinar is going to be about. The reason why we started with this one is because like we opened up the webinar with, this is going to be a busy year. It already is a tremendously busy year for our research clinics that we're involved with, all of our clients. At the end, we're going to talk about how you can become a client if you want and why I think there's tremendous bang for buck when it comes to that, which we'll get into, right? But it was important to do this topic in January, the first month of the year, because there's going to be a lot of studies coming your way, and you may think that that's great, which it is, but also could be bad. Sometimes it might be better not to do a study than to do one and do a bad job.
Well, if you're overworked, usually quality is going to take a hit. It's going to be diminished a little.
That's going to hurt your brand too. CRO, I mean, it's happened to some of our own sites, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where
sure.
The brand kind of took a hit. And yeah, it's usually the PI, and a lot of these CROs are big, so sometimes you might fall through the cracks even if you messed up on a study. But you don't want to take those chances, okay? So we're going to talk about how to not lose a study, the importance of quality assurance. I briefly glance at these slides that Amy made, so let's see what's on there. Chris, you excited?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so the first slide, what is quality assurance? Do you want to give them like a brief bird's eye view of what QA actually is? Do all sites need to have QA?
No, it's not a necessity or mandatory.
So
a requirement by sponsors of CR, right?
So let me stop you there.
CROs.
So the cliche in this industry is full of cliches.
Mm-hmm.
Like
Even the people that claim they're all about transparency actually don't want any transparency. They will all say QA is a must at any research clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, from a practical perspective,
no, it's never. Okay, I shouldn't say never, but I have never seen, say, in a feasibility questionnaire, how is QA handled at your site? I've never seen or experienced at a site selection visit question, how is QA handled at your site? This is not something right now in which they capture that data about a research site. So, how is this done in a feasibility questionnaire at your site? Then no, it's not a requirement.
Okay. Now, when do you think, as a business owner, it's a requirement, if ever?
Well,
having a QA component, a quality assurance component at your clinic.
Well, surely if it might be time for some QA. Then that's a little bit after the fact. You would prefer to catch that prior to, but it's certainly required at that point. One, because the sponsor or CRO may require it. And two, you would like moving forward to leave a better impression with that customer, right?
Okay. So Amy's slides, which again are beautiful so far, we've only looked at two. QA, the systematic and independent examination of all trial-related activities and documents to determine whether the evaluated activities were appropriately conducted and that the data were generated, recorded, analyzed, and accurately reported according to protocol, SOPs, and good clinical practice. So that's what QA is, the actual definition.
Okay.
Now, like you said, in practical terms, I think most sites need to have some QA component in place. That could be, you don't need to hire a CRA to be your QA person. That could be you, the site director, just taking on that additional role. Or it could be another coordinator that's maybe the backup coordinator.
Or you could have, say if you have a number of studies, you could have two coordinators. One's working on three, the other's working on four, and they QA each other.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure we'll get into this, but there's actually a Facebook group I'm involved with on clinical research. Like it's pretty much where CRAs go to complain, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of sites there too mm-hmm. talking. And I've started one of the things I'm doing because Facebook changed their algorithm. I'm trying to get more involved on that end as far as interacting with people as a human. On Facebook, they're
opposed to what, an alien?
As opposed to just someone uploading videos and not talking.
Amphibian? You said human.
Yeah, human being. Yeah, someone that engages with others.
Okay.
But that was funny. So one of the topics was how many studies is too much for a coordinator, and I was amazed at some of the answers. Now, we do primarily CNS studies. Those are complex.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some people doing oncology studies that said they have 20 studies per coordinator.
Holy crap.
Exactly. My sentiments indeed. Well, we never go over five per coordinator. Five ongoing.
You need a little bit more information, though, to really say
holy the crap. Average was 12 per coordinator on that group, and okay. there was a lot of people sure. responding.
But is that one patient per study, one or two, or are they enrolling as we would for a CNS trial? You know, there's 20 patients.
I imagine some of the studies they were enrolling a good amount, and some they weren't.
Okay, because if they're all one or two, it's not that bad.
Yeah, but 20 studies a coordinator?
Okay, it's a hassle with all the regulatory. It's just a lot of busy work involved, right?
Yeah, and I didn't spend that much time in the group chat, so I didn't really get to look at every answer, but there's a lot of them. Yeah. And I was amazed. So that ties into QA,
sure.
right?
Sure.
Like, how many coordinators do you think can handle? How many studies that you can enroll a moderate amount of patients on? Let's say 10 patients randomized in each study,
mm-hmm.
which is like an average amount, right? It's a little better than average.
I would say eight, 6 to 8. That's average.
6 to 8. Okay, let's go with 6 to 8 patients per study. How many of those kind of studies do you think one experienced coordinator should be able to handle before QA becomes an issue?
Are we speaking of general medicine or are we talking CNS?
Let's do both. Before QA becomes an issue.
I would say 3 in CNS, tops, three tops.
Central nervous system. And by themselves.
Yeah, and I would say five general medicine.
Okay.
Tops.
Now, what if you had a dedicated data entry person, a dedicated regulatory, and a dedicated recruiter? So the coordinator is really just being a coordinator and not all those other things.
And are they handling queries?
Yes.
Maybe one more.
Okay. So that Facebook group, they were just way too many per.
I think.
Yeah. I was surprised.
I think quality definitely is going to suffer.
I was surprised by those. So this is all about QA, how to not lose a study. That would be a good way to lose a study. Sure. Have your, as a CRA, I'm monitoring a couple sites.
Mm-hmm.
I know which of my coordinators, actually they're all somewhat overworked, but there's one that's excessively overworked.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, quality suffers on the study.
No, absolutely.
Right. I mean, they're not going to lose that study because the PI is a key opinion leader, and we've interviewed CRAs in the past. And sometimes key opinion leaders can get away with things.
Yeah, get away with murder.
But you can't get away from the FDA if the FDA comes to audit.
Yeah.
They don't care if you're a key opinion leader.
No, they don't.
Right. But so this, we're going to touch up on FDA audits, sponsor audits, but really from a business perspective, because the chances of you getting an FDA audit are a lot lower than the chances of a sponsor just not wanting to work with you ever again.
Oh, yeah.
From doing a bad job at QA.
Right? Oh, yeah. No comparison.
So next slide. The quality challenge. The ongoing challenge in managing the quality of clinical data is to continually monitor data collection procedures at every level of the study. This includes ensuring the data generated during the study reflect what is specified in the protocol and comparing the data in the CRF and data collected in the source for accuracy. So there's really two components to this, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's actually three. There's, do you follow the SOP, your own SOP and good clinical practice?
Mm-hmm.
Do you follow the protocol?
Mm-hmm.
And is the EDC, do the EDC and the source match, right? Is there anything else? I mean, I know there's labs and you got to follow the lab manual, but that's part of following the protocol also.
Right. So this is why a lot of sites do not employ QA, right? Because this is what the CRA does.
So a lot of sites think, hey, we have a free QA person coming in every 6 weeks, and that's our monitor.
Yep.
And let her, because most of them are her, you want to talk about gender equality? Because that's hot in the news right now?
Sure.
That we're definitely far. You know how I always say research is behind?
Yeah, 3 out of 4?
Female? CRAs are female.
Yeah.
You know how I always say clinical research is so far behind as far as adopting to digital media and how to recruit patients and all that stuff and adopting new technologies?
Excuse us for the tangent. Go on.
Yeah. One of the places where we need to applaud the industry is the females. And they get paid pretty much the same when you compare it. In fact, more sometimes.
And the national average for salary, they're paid double, triple, quadruple the national average.
As a CRA.
Yeah.
So we're well ahead of that. That's good. And so that was a tangent because a lot of sites say, hey, we don't need to hire a QA person because we have her mm-hmm. coming in most of the time to do our QA. Do you think that's a good strategy?
I think it's acceptable if your CRC is doing a competent job. I don't think you're going to suffer.
But how would you know as a business owner? Would you leave it alone and let the CRA kind of let you know how they're doing? Or would you
do we want to get into firsthand experience here?
Yeah, that's what people want to hear. So both.
Okay, sure.
Philosophical.
So as a site owner, you and I,
mm-hmm.
we have a site in which this is how we operate. Right?
We're very bad at micromanaging, both you and I.
Sure.
You're better than me, I think. Maybe not.
Well,
maybe not.
In this case, neither of us were good.
We both are horrible.
So we have a site in which this is the method we employ. We allow the CRC to do their job and assume they're doing it well.
Yeah.
But once the stuff hits the fan, and then it's time to step in, right?
Right.
And you receive word from the sponsor or CRO, mm-hmm. as the case may be,
mm-hmm.
and they will let you know, hey, in any number of ways, they might let you know that your quality is not up to par. And we were informed of this, so we had to employ some quality assurance.
That's right. And now we're complete opposite.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So good strategy or not, philosophically, to just kind of leave it up to the CRA
again
to handle your QA? Because you could argue both points. The argument is, I have limited resources. This CRA person's already coming in here. I think she's an ally, right? Because most will try to work with you.
They are an ally.
They're an ally until you consistently don't produce quality.
Mm-hmm.
And then they could become an enemy.
Sure. Well, they have to do their job. It's not a matter of becoming an enemy. They have to do their job.
Right. So, as a CRA myself, I know that. I have empathy for...
Sure. You don't intend to be the enemy, but if they're not doing their job correctly, there's nothing else you can do.
You have no choice at some point, right?
Yep.
So good strategy or not? I mean, you can argue both sides.
Again, it depends, right?
Yeah.
So if your CRC is competent, right, I think it's fine, right? Because if there's not a lot of... And you can question your CRA for any given trial. Hey, how's our quality compared to other sites?
Yeah.
Which I think we will start doing more regularly.
Yes, especially that we're getting busier, right?
Yeah. So how's our quality compared to other sites? And they'll tell you, right? Because they keep these metrics.
They keep metrics now.
We keep these metrics. They know where your site is compared to other sites. And they'll let you know. Ask your CRA. If you're average, if that's acceptable to you, that's fine then. Your current system works.
Mm-hmm.
If you're above average or exceptional, right, then keep doing what you're doing. Now, if it's subpar, well, then you might want to make some changes because...
And it's not too late. If you start out in a study subpar, you can turn it around.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just don't get put on a screening hold.
Right.
Because you may never get off that screening hold.
Correct.
And then you'll never be given a chance to prove yourself again.
Yep. And guess what? You're not getting any future projects most likely from that sponsor or CRO.
Right.
That's not a guarantee.
It could happen. Yeah. Like I said, you could fall through the cracks, and especially with all these mergers now.
Oh, yeah.
Right? INC just merged with somebody. They're called something else.
I mean...
Can't even keep up with the
names.
Taking
our personal experience, the study that we had issues with as far as quality, it's still ongoing. And we haven't... This just occurred, so it hasn't been rectified, at least in the sponsor's eyes or the CRO's eyes. We haven't had a chance to prove ourselves that things have improved. Mm-hmm. However, the CRO for that trial just gave us another study.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like these things are tracked exceptionally close, unless you really make a mistake, I think. You know, there's fraud going on at your site, or you're not enrolling patients, right?
Thankfully, those two things are never our problems with our sites.
Right. You're not enrolling patients, right? They give you a trial or a study and you don't enroll patients, and maybe they give you another and you still don't enroll patients. Well, guess what? They're not coming back to you, at least in my opinion. I wouldn't. Would you?
No, I wouldn't. Well, again, if they're a KOL PI, key opinion leader, and but if I'm the CRO and this pharma is telling me we have to use this guy, we've got to get him or her as a PI on board,
yeah,
work with them.
Okay, but say they're not a KOL.
Okay, then no.
Right.
No, because it's why? Why give yourself extra headaches?
Right, and you're wasting money.
Yeah. Okay, interesting topics. You won't hear this anywhere else. All the other webinars you hear out there, I mean, cookie cutter, cliche answers. Yes, every site needs QA. You know, obviously QA is important. We're not trying to downplay it. We're dedicating an entire webinar to this topic. But you can do it without hiring additional personnel.
And it depends on your situation, whether there's additional QA necessary.
Now, would you ever, as I go to the next slide, it's taking longer than I thought. Let's say you're making profit,
mm-hmm,
and you're consistently getting enough projects to where you're extremely comfortable, beyond comfortable. You're actually thinking of expanding.
Sure.
Would you, which very well might happen for a lot of clinics this year, would you take some of that profit and reinvest it in a full-time QA person?
I think it would depend on how profitable, right? So,
mm-hmm. Or would you promote an existing coordinator to be QA? Give them a few less studies. Like, let's say they do 5 studies a year. Now you give them 2. And you say, in addition to your two, you're now QA of all the studies we have.
No, I don't think I'd go that route. I don't think I would have somebody be the lead CRC on a study as well as be QA for all other studies.
Okay.
I would want somebody specifically assigned to that task.
So you'd have a dedicated QA person.
Yeah, and it could be somebody that's maybe entering data too, right?
They can,
if you don't have enough work for them.
Yeah, they can pick up the slack when it's needed.
Right.
I would hire that full-time QA person. We've actually had that in one of my other clinics when we were getting pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
You know him. One of our staff members doesn't like him at all.
Yeah.
But he was good at QA.
Sure, I can see that.
And so I've done that, and now we have smaller clinics where the coordinator or you or the site director serves as QA. But as we expand this here, it might not be a bad idea.
Sure.
We have to get a lot of studies consistently coming through that you can prove that you can enroll patients for before you go making investments into QA. Because with QA, you're not really getting revenue from that person's activities.
No, that's what I was just thinking. So.
That's the problem. That's why a lot of startups don't want to hire a QA, because they're like, well,
yeah,
where's my ROI? Well, your ROI could be that
5 years later, too.
5 years later, when you get audited by the FDA, they find less findings than they would if you didn't.
Not only that, but also your QA can help you develop a good relationship with all the CROs and sponsors that you work with.
Mm-hmm.
And the ROI on that's going to be many years later as well, typically.
And a more repeat business from sponsors and CROs.
Yeah.
So SOPs. So here's where you can plug our services. If you're a startup site, or not even a startup site, but you're a newer type site, mm-hmm. right? We actually, not only do we do biz dev for you, but we'll create SOPs for you. We'll work with you on creating your SOPs, creating source docs. What are SOPs? Why are they important?
Well, sometimes they're not.
Right. So tell them why sometimes they're not. Well, first of all, disclaimer, they are required. All right. At least if you want to get a realistic chance of getting a study.
You need the ICO.
You need SOP. The process of informed consent, SOP.
Yeah, you're going to be asked for that more often than not.
But if you're going to have an SOP, you might as well have an SOP that
but you... The problem with SOPs is the FDA is going to hold you to those standards.
Yes, which is why we did a whole webinar just on how to write SOPs.
Right.
A couple months ago.
Yeah.
Go on YouTube if you're looking for that. But I think they're important in the sense that sponsors require it.
A guidebook's better.
A guide, yeah, and like an employee handbook.
Yeah.
You can have a vague SOP, but then a detailed employee handbook.
Yes, and which those standards you're not held to.
Because the FDA will only ask for your SOP. Now, if they see your employee handbook.
Yes, that's why you don't ever leave things out you don't want them to see.
Correct. Okay, so SOP, write a thorough manual of SOPs, including informed consent, protocol review, handling of biological specimens, GCP, data management, procedure for misconduct. Make sure all site staff are trained on the SOP. Do you think you should have a quality assurance SOP, QA?
Well, I think if we're going to implement it, well, you know, no, I don't think you should. I think it should be in your handbook.
Employee handbook.
Yeah. Now, if you're asked for it, of course. I mean, you know, if a sponsor or CRO comes to your site and says, hey, we require quality assurance for any study that you work on with us, and we would like to see your SOP for that, of course, you have to have one.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as Dan said, we can certainly write that for you if you're not comfortable doing that yourself. But I think it's better to have it in your handbook.
Now, as far as site training, because that's the next slide. So here's the components of a quality site, okay? Clear personnel roles and responsibilities, having policies and procedures, so that could be part of the employee handbook,
mm-hmm.
right? Study team training. How important is study team training?
Well, anytime there's an amendment, it's certainly required.
Document it.
Yep.
You can never overtrain the documentation.
No.
Or you can never over-document the training on a study. QA and auditing. Now, is a QA an auditor, basically, an internal auditor?
I don't think by definition, no, but I mean, they're similar.
We have a client who is a startup,
mm-hmm.
but they're doing very well. You know them.
Okay.
They're close by.
Okay.
Blinglin.
Yeah, okay.
They hired a semi-retired CRA who happened to be a patient of the doctor.
Oh, yeah. He was talking about that when we were both there. That's right.
So she's their in-house QA, but she only comes in like one day a week.
Mm-hmm.
They pay her a fee.
Yep.
And she does a really good job for them.
Sure.
I think if you can get something like that set up, that's better than hiring someone full-time.
Mm-hmm.
They know what they're doing. They know what monitors are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
If you can find someone like that.
Sure.
And they're out there. There's consultants out there that will do that. They're looking for work. So if you go on LinkedIn, you can find these people. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good idea.
Sure.
What we're doing through our CRA Academy is we're training people who want to be CRAs. So when it's time for us to bring other people in to do QA for us, we already have infrastructure for that through our CRA Academy. We've already have a few coming in regularly now that we're training for that.
Yep.
So we're preparing too. We're not saying QA is not important. We're just saying it's not the end all be all. Just make sure that you're not screwing up on your study,
mm-hmm.
basically. And if that means bringing somebody else inside, do that.
Or maybe it's time to replace your coordinator.
That's true. You might need to have a difficult conversation with somebody at your site.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So corrective and preventative action plan, those are CAPAs. You need those in place when you do something like a protocol deviation or something that the monitor or QA person identifies as something that's becoming a pattern or something that's a significant deviation to the sponsor. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll require a CAPA.
Yep.
Personnel roles and responsibilities. So all study team members must be knowledgeable about regulations, GCP guidelines, SOPs. How often do you recommend people get GCP certified?
It's funny because it used to be a year. Every year they had to be certified, but I think the industry standard's changing. It seems to be moving to the 2-year mark.
Yeah, 2 years becoming more and more acceptable.
Yeah.
We used to do every year.
We still do. Yeah, because it's not the industry standard yet. Some sponsors or CROs still require once a year, but more and more it's 2.
And here's where the SOP ties in. So if you're creating your SOP, and in your SOP it says every year.
It has to be every year.
You need to do it every year, okay? Or change it. Yep. Change your SOP.
Every 2 years or as required by sponsor.
Don't just listen to Dan and Chris on a webinar and say, okay, we can do it every 2 years. Well, no, check your SOP.
Okay? And what does the sponsor or CRO require?
That too. So our SOP probably says yearly.
It does.
Yeah. Okay. So delegation of authority log, that's important. One of the places I find that sites, especially overworked sites, and I'm speaking as a CRA now, where overworked sites drop the ball is on regulatory, because it's one of those activities where you don't get compensated for it.
Not only that, but it's not, I mean, it, of course it's part of quality, but it's not really looked at closely, I don't think.
Well, let me tell you, as a CRA, I shared your thoughts too as a site director, study coordinator.
Yeah.
As a CRA, that's the most important, regulatory. Like what I'm required to collect copies of every time I go to the site for a visit,
mm-hmm.
is a bunch of regulatory stuff. I never have to collect anything like source documents.
No, of course
anything.
You don't. That makes sense.
For the CRAs, it's top priority. For the sites, especially the overworked sites, it's bottom of the totem pole.
Sure.
And this is where they clash. And guess who's going to win this fight every single time?
Well, sure. But that being said, I would still think from an FDA perspective, right?
Yeah.
So what's submitted to the FDA for approval,
mm-hmm.
is the data in regards to patient visits.
Of course.
It's not the regulatory.
No, that's inspectable and auditable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But that's not what they're submitting for approval of their device or drug.
Correct. But now with electronic trial master files,
mm-hmm.
which the FDA has access to,
mm-hmm.
they can look and they can say, okay, this site has yet to complete their delegation log. But they've enrolled. They're high enrolling.
Sure, and that's one. I mean, okay, so now I'm going to contradict myself. That is one of the one of the main things that the FDA look at when they go to the site is the delegation of duties log.
Yep, that's why it's on the slide.
And probably the reason behind that is because of this perspective from sites, right? So, no, I'm not saying it shouldn't. You should not do it, and it shouldn't be done right. What I'm saying is, I don't think it's a huge consideration. It definitely needs to be done.
Yeah.
But there's not timelines. necessarily on regulatory, right? I mean, yeah, you have to change your 1572 if you move or add an individual to the study, but there are timelines in the protocol in regards to when data is entered, when AEs are answered.
Study windows, yeah, study visit windows.
Exactly.
Would you ever hire a full-time regulatory person?
If I were a huge company.
So what's huge?
Yeah, you have enough to keep somebody busy full-time doing that, which you would need.
Could only be 8 studies.
I don't think that's enough. No.
16?
Maybe.
Okay. So in the teens, when you get up in the teens.
Yeah, you could hire somebody full-time.
Because let me tell you, from a monitor, again, I'm really glad I got a part-time monitoring gig for the last year because I get to see like the perspective from the CRA, not just hearing about it, but living it.
Mm-hmm.
The sites that have dedicated regulatory specialists
are better. Sure.
Are better. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. They're dedicated. They know their responsibilities.
And it makes my life easier as monitor too.
Sure. No, yeah, of course. But, I mean,
you can't afford it.
Well, not only that, but okay, you were a coordinator at one time, right?
Yeah. That's how I started.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, 3 studies, how much time do you have to spend on regulatory? I mean, if you're going to do it right, right?
Right?
How much time do you have to spend on regulatory a week? Like maybe 3 hours?
Yeah, you're filing safety letters. You're making right. sure those get signed.
You're writing notes.
You're not really changing the delegation log because if you're on a small site, you don't have like a bunch of staff turnover.
Exactly. Right? So I just think you need a lot of studies in order to hire somebody full time for regulatory. Now,
I would say like 2 hours a week max. 2 hours a week. Max.
For 3 studies?
Yeah.
Okay. It could be a little bit more, right? If you have to write some.
Well, when amendments happen, you got to do a training
exactly.
log.
Exactly.
And there's an average of 4 to 4.5 amendments per study now.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, yeah, it'd take a lot of studies in order to need somebody full time to handle regulatory. Now, you can have additional tasks if you don't have enough, in which fewer trials would be necessary. You could have them be responsible for, say, contracts and budgets, invoicing, those kind of things,
mm-hmm.
right, which are also necessary
mm-hmm.
and take time.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do that. You could probably get away with having maybe 8 to 10 studies if they're doing
right.
those things as well.
Right. It's all about, I think it's, you shouldn't just hire people just for the sake of hiring people.
No, absolutely not.
I think you really, as a site director or a business owner, you need to pay attention to the workload of your coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why it helps if you're the owner that used to be a coordinator.
Yeah, you understand how these things work and what's right. necessary.
And so, okay, so you got to, it's sort of subjective then, right? Like there's no rule. When is a coordinator overworked? Because sometimes they're overworked and then some weeks they're not.
And it depends on the individual as well.
That's right.
I mean, we've had a number of coordinators that complain at one study.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I know who. Future doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just depends on the individual. I just think you need to be realistic. I think, again, like you said, I think it's best if you were a coordinator at one time so you can relate. And, you know, you can't be be politically correct. I was going to say slave driver, but I don't know if that's politically correct.
I don't know. Yeah, you can't. I mean, you can't be like a jerk and just keep giving work to your staff. Like in that Facebook group I went to, mm-hmm. right? I mean, if that's true, if those numbers are true, and there's like 20 studies per coordinator,
yeah.
right? I mean, I don't see how that person should make less than $100,000 a year.
Yeah, maybe even more.
And that's cheap. I mean, for what the work they're doing. So.
And if you're doing a good job.
Yeah, there's a fine line with the staff workload, and it's something that I think we should dedicate a whole nother webinar on.
Oh, yeah, we could. Absolutely.
Staff workload, like how to actually assess that. right? But this webinar is all about how to not lose a study. So no, you don't need a dedicated QA person. No, you don't need a dedicated regulatory person. Of course, those things help. But of course, we live in the real world where we have to pay bills, rent, and everything else. Payroll.
Yeah.
Payroll taxes.
And we would like to see a profit.
And you would like to see a profit.
So, yeah, I think the best rule of thumb, if you want a rule of thumb, I would say, like I said, have conversations with your CRAs and see where you're at in the spectrum of all the other sites for the trial.
Yep. I think that's good. If you do that, I'm a big fan of the 80-20 rule. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the 20% that I can do that will make the biggest impact, 80% of the impact?
Sure.
And I think you hit it right on the head. When the site owner or the director or the PI, but most of the time, let's be honest, it's not going to be the PI unless they are the site owner
right.
and director.
Right.
You need to talk to your CRA and have an open line of communication.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let them know, hey, I want this project to be just as successful as you. In fact, more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the owner.
Right.
Let me know how we're doing. Be honest with me.
Mm-hmm.
And if we need to bring in QA, I'll do it. Right. Or I'll do it myself, or I'll exactly. bring somebody to come in.
Right. If you want to eliminate the cost, do it yourself.
But if we don't, also let me know. So just let each monitoring visit, let me know what the progress is.
Sure.
Where you think we're going. Just like a stock trends up and down,
mm-hmm.
right? Staff can do the same. Staff, quality.
Yep.
Do you provide delegation of authorities log as part of your service for your site directors? No, every sponsor will have a delegation of duties log that will be blank, and it's up to the PI to delegate who's doing what.
We can guide you. Yeah, we can guide you through the process of filling this out. Absolutely.
And we can help you with your SOPs when it comes to setting that up
mm-hmm.
for each study.
Yep.
But good question. All right, so training. Make sure all study team members have up-to-date training for every protocol. This may include protocol training, EDC training, GCP, IATA, NIH. All training should be documented. Here's where training becomes a problem, again, with the busy sites, the overworked coordinators. There's a protocol amendment. Everyone on the 1572 needs to be trained on that protocol amendment.
Correct.
And most often what happens is half of them get trained.
So what's the procedure to getting trained?
The procedure should be the PI or the monitor or the coordinator or the QA, whoever the PI delegates to do that, trains the staff. Really what it is they tell them the changes. So here's what happens in a protocol amendment.
Typically it's the CRA, right?
It should be, but if the CRA is busy.
If you miss somebody.
Well, it should be the PI.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it could be the CRA.
Mm-hmm.
But if the CRA is busy, which amendments never happen in the beginning of the study. They happen in the middle when people are enrolling tons of patients.
Mm-hmm.
So the CRA is not going to have time to do the training.
Sometimes.
Every time they go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it falls on the PI.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what happens. So protocol gets amended. The site is sent a new protocol. The PI needs to sign the protocol amendment signature page.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, I would say usually these days, they send a letter of change summary. So you don't got to read through the protocol and figure out what's been changed. They send you a summary of the changes.
Right.
So a training on an amendment, if it's simple, can be 5 minutes.
Oh, sure.
Hey, Chris, instead of visit three, instead of collecting vitals at visit three, we do it at visit two now. Don't worry about visit three.
Right. We no longer collect vitals at visit three.
Right. You got that?
Yeah.
Okay. Sign here.
Right.
Okay. That's a training log. You're done.
Right.
Now, of course, that's very simple. Sometimes it gets much more complex. But that's it. But sometimes sites don't do that because they don't think it's important.
Right.
Maybe I had that conversation with you.
Mm-hmm.
So I trained you, but we never documented it.
Right.
And maybe you don't come to the site that often. So when the CRA comes and says, did you train Chris? And I tell them, yeah, I did. And she will say, well, he didn't sign it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll say, yeah, he's almost never here, but I forgot to get him to sign it. And then 6 weeks later, she'll come back and she'll say, hey, this is still not done. There's actually been another amendment. Did you train him on that also? It's like, yeah, but sorry, we've been so busy.
Yeah.
That's how these things start piling up.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're at a site where there's like 20 staff members, It's very easy to get 12 of them trained and 8 missing because they're out of town or they never come to the site. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is real world stuff. So this is why I prefer as a site to not put people on the 1572 that I know are not really going to be involved in the study. Mm-hmm. Unless I'm absolutely required to.
Right.
Like sometimes they'll absolutely require you have another MD as a sub-I. Mm-hmm. Then you have no choice.
Yep.
But if you know that that MD is rarely going to come to the site, it's not a good idea to put them on that 1572 because now you're going to need to get them to sign every single amendment,
yep.
trainings for every single amendment, mm-hmm. all kinds of stuff.
Including trained on the initial protocol.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So that's how in the real world, that's how these things, these issues creep up. Mm-hmm. When you're talking like philosophically, every staff needs to be trained on the protocol amendment. Sounds so simple, right? Mm-hmm. But in reality, pretty difficult, especially when you have 20 studies per coordinator.
Yeah, and if you have 20 staff members on each study, and they're all different.
Poor coordinator.
What a nightmare.
Poor coordinator, poor CRA.
Yeah.
Because the CRAs are expected to pick up the slack when the site's not performing.
Right.
You know, because the lead CRA is going to ask the CRA, well, this has been an outstanding action item for 3 visits.
Right. Why is this not getting done?
Yeah. What
and
are
you're
you
to blame as the CRA.
You're not really
slightly,
to blame.
At
yeah,
least slightly.
You are slightly to blame. They're basically telling you need to get really tough on the site now.
Right.
And don't make us do it because we're paying you to do it.
Yep.
Yeah. So, again, you won't hear this stuff on any other webinar. So that's staff training, and that's where people get into problems. Document management and record keeping. E-source is going to be huge in the next decade. We're very early. We're not seeing that often, but it's coming. So there's going to be tons of webinars just on that in the future. But right now, just know source docs, subject binders should be handled properly, enforce a system for naming and filing, adequately train staff on how you archive source docs. That's pretty much standard stuff as far as document management. Corrective and preventative action. So again, we talked about this earlier. If there's an issue in a study, you might be asked to do a corrective action plan, or if you have a good QA system in place, you'll do one without being told. If you notice that there are deviations happening or just errors that you'd like to correct. You can also revise your SOPs if you need to. And then you just have to have all your staff retrained on the SOPs. Regulatory, we talked about it. I mean, this is where the overworked sites and the overworked coordinators typically drop the ball. And that's sometimes no fault of the study coordinator. They're just overworked and they have unreasonable site managers. But that's where most of the problems happen. Source document review. So you just want to make sure that the protocol is being followed, that the source docs are correct, that the informed consent is being done properly. No missing initials, no missing dates, no single cross out errors, initial date errors. It's unacceptable to have a patient not, it's unacceptable to have a patient miss a signature on an ICF, but it happens. But it shows that you don't really have a QA system in place for properly consenting. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you, you're not following your process of consent SOP if that happens.
Oh, yeah.
That's a huge, huge deal. I've had that happen as a CRA also and as a site. And then CRF and ECRF review, this is primarily what the monitor is doing when they're doing source data verification at your site. So as we wrap up, I want to give them a rundown of our services just really quick. And then anyone have questions right now, send them our way or email me. Everyone is going to get a replay email to them. And this will be on YouTube as well as the podcast, Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. So tell them about our services, just 1 minute.
All right. So for $1,000 a month, what we will provide to you would be business development. We'll reach out on behalf of your site to sponsors and CROs and bring studies aboard for you, or at least be very helpful in that regard. Mm-hmm. We will also negotiate any budget and contract that you receive, not only for studies that we acquire for your site, but ones that you may as well. It doesn't matter. We would negotiate any budget and contract you would like us to do for you. We can create SOPs. We can create source documents. Essentially, anything that can be done remotely. We're not there. We can't see the patients and guide you through that necessarily. But if you should have a question, you certainly can call us anytime. And we don't really help out much with recruitment. But other than those two issues, we can pretty much do, or at least help you with anything in regards to research. And $4,000 a month.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you, everyone who attended. Thank you to Instagram Live. If you don't follow me on Instagram and you're on the webinar, make sure you do that. It's Dan Asfera. We live stream these webinars. As well as a bunch of other stuff. The webinars we only do once a month. Next month, we should do one on how to know whether your staff is overworked. That's a good topic, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so thank you, everybody. There's no questions. I'll email everyone a replay link and catch you next month on ways to assess whether your staff is overworked.
So hey, everybody, thank you very much for listening to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you leave a review, if you could be so kind, please. And also go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com if you're interested in learning more about who I am, who some of my guests are. You can have access to some of my YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos about clinical research. So go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. And you can also call or text me anytime, 949-415-6256. Also follow me on any social media platform. It's Dan Asfera. And you can also email me if you'd like, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Thank you very much.